We would like to begin this podcast by acknowledging that the land on which we record is the occupied, traditional, and unceded territory of the Stalo First Nation.
Listening takes time. Listening takes effort. It takes also a certain attitude of humility to be able to understand their situation so that now they will also decide for themselves what, how they want to move, and we can accompany them in that moving forward. And there's something really beautiful about it.
Welcome to the Ending Poverty Together podcast. I'm Shalane, and we're here to discuss big questions about poverty in bite-sized ways. Stefan Lutz holds an MSc in Ecological Agriculture and a BSc in Tropical Agriculture. He has worked for the last 20-plus years with World Renew in Kenya as program consultant, working with Anglican church-based relief and development organizations throughout the country and focusing mostly in agriculture, food security, environmental restoration, health and nutrition, and village savings and loans. He has a passion for the environment and nature, climate change advocacy, participatory community development, and working with smallhold farmers in producing nutritious and diverse foods in an ecological, economically viable, empowering, and sustainable way. Born and raised in Honduras, Central America, Stefan has lived and worked in several other countries, including Germany, USA, Mali, and Kenya, where he and his family have lived for the last 23 years. Stefan, thank you so much for joining me today, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. There are so many pieces in your bio here that are intriguing to me, but I think it might be helpful if we just begin by talking about World Renew, the organization that you work with, and maybe you can just let us know a little bit about the organization and then specifically a little bit more about your role.
Sure. Thank you so much for this opportunity, and it's a pleasure to be here. And World Renew is a relief and development arm of the Christian Reformed Church in North America. So we are a bi-national organization, both in the U.S., based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and also in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. And we work in several countries around the world, especially in Latin America, West, East, and South Africa, and Asia. And our goal is to serve communities globally in circumstances of injustice, poverty, and disaster, so that communities are transformed and they improve their situation in sustainable ways. So that transformation, that sustainability is very key for us. It's actually part of what we do and a big part of what we do. And we also have an approach of not working, implementing directly with the programs or the projects, but we work through partnership, through church, local church partnerships in these countries. And that we offer an aspect that is very key and very critical for us in our work, and we are very proud of it, and that is the capacity building of these church organizations. So even if we decide to leave or we decide to move on, these organizations are built, their capacity is built, and they are they remain doing the community work that we are envision and that we hope happens for better well-being and ending poverty in the long term, of course.
Yeah, that's interesting. As you know, I work with Food for the Hungry, and that aligns so much with the approach that we have to doing poverty alleviation work. One of the things that you mentioned is not actually implementing things yourselves, but having these church networks and partnerships. How does this process begin? If you were to come into a new community, what is some of the first work that's done?
So some of the first work we do, of course, is to get to know the church and the partner. So we really focus and value relationships much more than even strategy, and we always say fixing a situation. But starting from a relationship point of view, where we get to know the church, where we get to know the community. And one way we always try to start as much as possible is through participatory methodology. We call it PRA, participatory rural appraisal. And okay. The PRA is a process in which the community not just identifies their own needs, but also comes up with solutions for themselves. And beyond that, they form committees and structures, community structures, that allows them to take their own development in their own hand. This is a very empowering process for them, and it takes away some of the power from outside and gives it to them. And not only the power, but also the dignity. We talk about empowering, but we rarely talk about dignity. And the dignity part is very key for World Renewed, so that the people on the ground experience that dignity and that opportunity to say, this is our development, and we know what we know better, how we can do it, when we can do it, how long it will take, and what resources, and what are we going to even to contribute, and how are we going to get organized to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's a very key part of our beginning in what we do. And we come up with these community action plans after that initial phase and facilitation of the community. This process can take anywhere between 3 and 6 months. And it's very critical for us as World Renewed, because we feel that it's a good start to giving the power and the dignity to the community.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like listening, especially early on, must play a significant role in how you approach a new community.
Yes, yes. Listening, especially active listening. There's different types of listening, but active listening is very important, because in the essence, when you listen, you also care. We often don't see it that way, but by listening, by trying to, not even listening, but trying to deeply understand what is going on there, gives us an opportunity to care, gives us an opportunity to even go into the mindset and the attitude and the culture that is there. Because often we think that we can fix, like I said earlier, through technological advances, through tools, through all these things which are good, but we don't see that culture and other aspects, unseen things that we often don't realize play a key role in either making this successful project or unsuccessful project. Not only in project, but development in the end. So listening really allows us to get to understand what people are going through and to really listen to what they're saying. We might go and we think we listen, but there's this deep listening. And that, Trilling, that takes time. Listening takes time. Listening takes effort. And it takes also a certain attitude of humility to be able to understand their situation, so that now they will also decide for themselves what how they want to move. And we can accompany them in that moving forward. And there's something really beautiful about that.
That is a beautiful, humble approach. And I know when someone listens well to me and I feel understood, there's a freedom and then there's a trust that comes in that relationship that it really has to be earned. And so it seems like such a beautiful foundation to start working with a community on, that there is that trust and that sensitivity to the needs of people and to really trying to hear where they're at.
Yes, very much. Trust is a big part of this, Shalane, because if there is no trust, as you can imagine, it's very hard to move forward in a relationship, whether it's in your work, with your work colleagues, your marriage, with your friendships, and in this case, with the community as well.
Right.
And that trust is earned, and that trust cannot be forced. And it takes time, and it takes, I think, humility, listening, and sometimes even dealing with conflict. You know, when there is a situation or there's disagreement, we can talk about it. We can see how to resolve it together or facilitate process where the community resolve it themselves without us even being involved in that, resolution, conflict resolution. But yes, trust is key. And also empathy. I think one of the things we lack is empathy in terms of where are these people coming from, because every community has already a beginning. They already come from somewhere. We're not starting from zero. And I believe that that's a big issue in our development, that we don't realize that a community is already on the way. They're already somewhere. And where can, wherever we meet them at to do these processes, they've already come somewhere and they want to go somewhere. And we're just trying to find out with them how to do that.
And it's actually really, it's really very arrogant of us, isn't it? If we come in and assume that just because we've arrived, that's the starting point. I think that's really an important piece to note, that they have been on a journey, they're continuing on a journey, and then there's this opportunity to step in and walk with for a time.
Yes, very much so.
Stefan, would you be willing, able to share maybe some specific stories of how you've seen this work? It's great to chat about this from a, you know, this is sort of a high level approach of how it happens, but can you think of some specific times where you've seen the impact that this listening approach has made a difference?
Yes, I can actually. There are several stories that I can mention. And what one thing I have realized is wherever we start with a participatory approach, even I'm going to say 20 years ago when we first started facilitating these participatory processes in Kenya, when we go back to those communities 10, 15, 20 years later, we realize that there still is something is happening. Either they're still doing something, or the programs that we implemented through the church with them are still there. You know, I can think very specifically of some water pan, water harvesting projects we did on the coast and coast of Kenya, some very impoverished communities. You go there now and these water pans, which were dug out by the community themselves, are still there. And they're still providing water for the community, and 20 years later. And on, we're just realizing that something sticks behind, something stays. You know, and several projects in several communities in different ways. But wherever we did a participatory approach, there is a more likelihood of sustainability and of something happening and something remaining and something just still there. So in Kenya, we've realized, apart from that, I think this might also be good to mention, is that we realize that there are four critical factors actually that happens when we want transformational, sustainable, and impact long-term communities. And one, of course, is the participatory approach I just mentioned. But then there's another one that talks that is really about a mature community with strong leadership and vision that is ready to own their own development and contribute even in kind some of the resources towards their own project. So leadership and the contribution which come out of these participatory processes. The other one is that there is a lot of understanding, mutual understanding between us and the community and the church, especially between the church organization that we work through and the community. And sufficient time needed for sustainable impact. I always say time, time, and time. Right. We sometimes want to do things quick, and there is a time for that. Sometimes we need to act very quickly, especially in humanitarian relief and emergency situations.
Sure.
But I strongly believe that in community development, it is, we need some sufficient time. I can't say it's this amount or this amount, but we've realized, for example, in food security programming, we are kind of saying between 8 and 10 years is a good time to do a food security project instead of 2 or 3 years, for example. That gives enough time to do the process, to set up the committees, to start implementing the community action plans, and then in the end even start diminishing some of the funding so that they can have the opportunity to for them to continue doing this even when the funding is not there. The other one is a necessary flexibility. And again, like we said earlier, the active listening and adapting to the continuous change and needs of the community and the country you work in. because mm-hmm. Kenya, change happens all the time. You know, the Kenya right. that was there 20 years ago is not the same Kenya that is here about 20 years later. So we need to constantly be adapting and being flexible and mm-hmm. not being so rigid. Sometimes there's so much prescriptive development happening, and we right. lose, and we're so rigid, and we're not flexible enough, we're not adaptable enough. And I feel this is an opportunity for us to do more of that and do it better. So for the greater impact and the greater service we do to the farmers and the people we serve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I can imagine, too, when you have this participatory model, because I see it happen within our Food for the Hungry communities, the flexibility and the adaptation comes from the community members. They recognize that something is changing. They recognize a need for perhaps an adjustment. And so to walk alongside people in that rather than resist that, to me, just makes a whole lot of sense. But it also, I think, ties back to what you were speaking to earlier about maintaining the dignity of the people who are involved in their own community development.
It's very much so. And that mm-hmm. dignity is so key, and you know, and the patience and the understanding and the time. And I also want to mention one more name, because it's very important for us, is passion. Mm-hmm. We rarely talk about this, but development, as much as it is, can we say it's a job or it's a work opportunity, there has to be a passion in what mm-hmm. we do. And mm-hmm. a commitment, and we need to have the right skills. And I'm not even talking about technical skills. I'm talking about attitudinal skills for right. this, for being a good facilitator, for just having the right heart. I want to bring this out, mm-hmm. the right heart, listening heart, so that we can listen well. And mm-hmm. we're able to, once we listen well, we're also able to know how we can help better. If we don't listen well, if we don't understand, we're not able to help. We're sometimes too quickly to come to conclusions, mm-hmm. especially our Western mindset. I come from Germany. We are always trying to fix. We're always trying to do things quick. We think we have all the knowledge and the technical know-how, the transfer, all these components that we talk about. But in the end, it's not up to us. It's really more about facilitating processes for them to come up with the solutions. So this mm-hmm. passion also comes from the church development staff on the ground. I realized that where there is passionate church staff on the ground, and the way they're interacting with the community and visiting them, and the relationship they have with the community makes a huge difference. And they tend mm-hmm. to spend more frequent and quality time, not just, mm-hmm. hey, I'm going to do 10 people. I said, no, I'd rather do 3 people today and right. sit down with them and listen to them and understand them, and then we'll know how to move forward. And that quality time we've heard from the communities themselves is so key, and they really appreciate that from the church development staff on the ground. So that's mm-hmm. something I wanted to mention, that the passion and the commitment and the frequent and quality time that we spend at community mm-hmm. level. And one mm-hmm. more thing to add to that, I believe sure. that in this era of also project management, and I want to be very cynical, not even cynical, but critical here, of donors mm-hmm. who sometimes request a lot of reporting, a right. lot of time spent in the offices trying to do reports. I'm not against that. I think we need to mm-hmm. be accountable. I think we need to do reporting in office level or wherever, and to mm-hmm. ensure that there is a good accountability and then reporting back in there. But at the same time, we don't want to compromise that time that we can spend in the community as well. So I'm hearing from church development staff very often, they're so busy in the offices, they don't even have time anymore to go to the field. And I feel if we get to that point, we have right. We've lost the essence of what it means to do community mm-hmm. impactful and transformational community development.
Right. Yes. If the focus gets skewed too much in the wrong direction and doesn't free people up to actually fulfill that passion and walk alongside community members, then doesn't feel like the work is being done in an honoring way.
Yes, it's very much so.
You have mentioned, Stefan, working with church networks quite a bit and other partnerships that you have. Can you speak a little bit to how that results in food security programs being developed? I'm thinking specifically issues around food security, because I know that that is a worldwide issue right now. And so how do those networks and partnerships help implement food security programs?
Thank you, Shirley. Yes, I think and I know from my experience over many years that we cannot, first and foremost, think we can do this alone. If somebody thinks they can solve everything alone, it's not the right attitude. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the value of networks and relationships come into place, because in the end, when you network, meaning it's not just networking for no purpose or just for the purpose of getting funds. We need to network for various reasons, and I believe we need to really network for learning and to find out what others are. First of all, we find out what others are doing, other organizations are doing. Mm-hmm. We also find out that other organizations have strengths. And so World Renew, for example, has their strengths and weaknesses, but Food for the Hungry might also, of course, have their strengths and weaknesses, and so on. So you complement each other. You share information. Mm-hmm. You exchange information. You even do exchange visits. So that there is a lot more learning. Learning is a very critical part that we can't underestimate in this community development. And I don't want to just focus on learning. We also need to have impact on the ground, and we need to have the capacity building and all those other aspects I mentioned. But we need to be open to learning, because as we learn from others, we can also do things better. And we need to always be thinking about doing it better. Better, of course, is anybody can define what better is, but together, I believe we can walk further, we can do more. We can learn more from each other. And in the end, I think we can have more impact. And that's not just from the learning side. We can also come together to do projects together. And of course, that brings another element of complexity. Because the more people are involved in a project, the more organizations, it also makes it more complicated. And you have to communicate very well. And you have to agree on all things. But even that, there's a lot of learning there that can happen. So I literally believe that the more we network, the more we come together, the more impact we'll have in our work. And that goes from the way that we, like I said earlier, that we learn from each other because of our strengths and weaknesses. And also the way we then together feel that we're also not alone. Sometimes it gets very lonely in this community development and very frustrating. That's something we don't talk about as development workers. And when we share with others, and when we listen with others, and when we fellowship with others, we can also be encouraged and motivated and inspired to do better.
There's so many obstacles and challenges that don't get spoken to about doing development work, and to be able to share some of that with colleagues across organizations is so valuable, and the learning too. And it speaks to me of the integration piece that you're doing as well. And I wonder if we can spend the last few minutes of our time together focusing maybe a little bit more specifically on the kind of agriculture, the kind of methodology that is used for farming and for food security. I'm thinking specifically, you had mentioned to me earlier about conservation agriculture as your main methodology. Would you just expand on that a little bit and tell me a little bit more about what that looks like?
Sure. Thank you for that. Yes, conservation agriculture is certainly one of the methodologies practices, I'd rather call it a practice than a rigid methodology, because I believe, as an agriculturalist myself, and I believe that every farm is like a piece of art, and every farm is different, and we should allow people and farmers to treat it and do what it, they need to do to their soil, to their trees, to their plants, to whatever animals, in a way that they want to and they want to experiment with. So that's why I always say there's no one blanket approach, and we have to be careful when we come in with these methodologies and with these practices as well. So I'd rather call conservation agriculture a practice, because with three principles, and one is that you don't there's minimal disturbance of the soil. So it's in the way in the U.S. I believe they call it no-till. And then the other one is where you keep the soil covered with mulch material or anything organic, so that it retains moisture for the crops to have more availability of moisture and then have a higher productivity, especially in those that time where the rain is lower or even no rain. And then the last one is a crop association and rotation. So you do want to rotate your crops. You do want to change the association as well, so that you have a better productivity in the end, less issue with pests and diseases. So those are the principles we teach. But in the end, like I said, the farmer can take these principles and do it the way they want to. For example, I know a farmer who does potatoes with the conservation agriculture principles and uses eucalyptus. And I would say, whoa, eucalyptus, you know, I'm not sure if that would work, but it has worked for him. And he's also realized that there's less insects when he uses these eucalyptus branches. In other parts, we use what we call green and cover crops, green manures and cover crops. Those are plants, nitrogen-fixing plants that we plant literally with the crops so that they also cover the soil. And so I think, again, going back to the art of the farmer and to the farming being an art in many ways, let's allow the farmer to really do what they believe they want to do and innovate and be creative and allow to farm the way that they feel is better and learn from the mistakes as well. One thing we don't talk about very often is that most of the learning comes from mistakes. You know, a mistake is not a mistake unless you don't learn from it. So we have to embrace mistakes. We have to embrace that not every farm will look maybe neat or will be the way we want it to be. But find out from the farmer why he did that, and you can find out what has he learned from that. So this, as you can see now, I think you're getting the point that we need to spend time with a farmer. We need to spend quality time to understand these principles. But yes, conservation agriculture has really demonstrated for us the last, especially over 10 years that we've been implementing it in, as World Renew globally, that it is a methodology or their principles that can really help a farmer get a crop in times when there is less rainfall because of the climate change variability, the extreme weather we're experiencing in Kenya. And it gives them a less risk. I'm not saying it solves all the issues. And if there is a big drought, it's still going to be difficult, but it's going to really help. And we want to always encourage things that we feel help towards better livelihoods, towards having food and having income, and having things that make them, that give them a better well-being.
I have never heard the analogy before of a farm being a piece of art. And that just resonates with me. And then to hear how you walk alongside farmers, you listen well, and you allow for that creativity, that expression within the farm itself, that's just a beautiful picture. Thank you for sharing that.
I think it makes you also appreciate that, you know, that development there's art and there's beauty. There is all these other things that we don't really pay attention to. Even when you see flowers around a homestead, you might say, not myself, because I really appreciate flowers, but, you know, you would say, why flowers? But flowers also bring beauty to a homestead. You might not be able to eat them, but you can cut them, you can put them in your house. So these are also added beauties to development that are very important, because life is often more than just survival and hardship. There's also a lot of beautiful things, and I believe development and farms and people and relationships and networks all bring a beauty itself to life. And we need to bring out, start to see the beauty in everything. And I think once we do that, we will have a different approach to development as well.
A previous guest I had on, David Collins, actually the founder of Food for the Hungry Canada, he made a very similar comment that stuck with me. And that is when he went into communities, when he goes into communities and he sees flowers, he knows that that community has hope. And I think what I'm hearing you say is if we don't appreciate beauty in this process, then we're really missing out on something. We're really losing something if the focus is all on technical and task. So thank you for sharing that. Our time is drawing to a close here. Is there anything else that you were hoping that I would ask you today or anything else that you would like to share before we finish up?
No, I think I've said quite a bit and it came from the heart. And it's just thank you for this opportunity, for having me just express some of my challenges, but also some of the best practices I've learned and some of the beauty that I've seen in this work. And because it is, there's a lot of, I always say there's so much to learn every day. There's so much to give every day. There's so much to appreciate every day when we are involved in this almost calling and opportunity to serve, that I wish that others will also find that beyond just the technical and being a job, because it is then that we will actually have a passion. We will also have a new joy in serving. And I think when we serve with joy, other people notice that. And when other people notice that, it makes it just better. I'm not sure what else to say, how to say that, but it does make it better for everybody. And that means also not seeing always the poverty and trying to fix it, but seeing so many other things that maybe we don't see because we don't spend time, we don't appreciate, we don't understand, we don't listen carefully.
Thank you. That is a great and powerful place to wrap up our conversation, because those words of wisdom are true not just for international community development, but for work in whatever country we're in whatever neighborhood, whatever family we're part of. Those are principles that are really important to live by. So thank you, Stefan. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and all the best in the work that you do. To explore what your next steps could be, or find out more about FH Canada and World Renew, start by checking out fhcanada.org/resources.